From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. He may still be described by the media as a long shot to win the nomination, but Democratic presidential hopeful Bernie Sanders Tuesday reaffirmed his intention to stay in the race after winning big in Oregon Tuesday and tying former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton in Kentucky, putting a spotlight on what the New York Times called Clinton's vulnerabilities.
Many of the pundits and politicians, they say Bernie Sanders should drop out. The people of California should not have the right to determine who the next president will be. Well, let me be as clear as I can be. I agree with you. We are in to the last ballot is cast.
Sanders was speaking at a rally in Southern California Tuesday. RT's Ed Schultz spoke with Florida Representative Alan Grayson about Bernie Sanders' effort to get superdelegates to follow the voters' preference.
Clinton has the support of 524 superdelegates, and Sanders has 40. Sanders is hoping elected officials listen to their constituents the way Congressman Alan Grayson did. The Florida congressman conducted an online survey to guide his support for Bernie Sanders. Did you ever think that it would come to this point, that there was going to be a big fight over superdelegates, that this process, it was almost like the cart before the horse, and I think you saw this early on. Your thoughts on what's unfolding between the two campaigns now?
You mean, did I ever conceive of the possibility that there might be a close election? Ed, I represent Florida. Of course, every election in Florida is decided by between 4 and 7 votes.
So the superdelegate fight, now, right now, Bernie Sanders is saying momentum. He's talking about polls that are show him ahead, beating Donald Trump better than Hillary Clinton, and this momentum, and then swinging superdelegates. Do you think that will do it?
I don't know. I really don't know. But I think that there are some important points to be made. First, the process is nowhere near over. We still have almost 1,000 regular delegates, pledged delegates, still to be selected. Now, admittedly, Secretary Clinton's up by roughly 250 to 300 pledged delegates. But as you can see, there's a lot more to be chosen. Her states were front loaded. As I indicated on your show a couple of months ago, the February 1st to March 15th calendar was very advantageous to her. And ever since then, from March 16th onward, it's been very advantageous to the senator. And we're seeing the results of that right now. So it's too early to call this fight. And I think that people should be relaxed. Go let the voters go about their business and let their voices be heard. As to the argument that Senator Sanders is a better general election candidate than Secretary Clinton, the polls have very consistently showed him with a larger lead over Donald Trump than the secretary. But of course, you know, you have to let the voters choose who they want. It is interesting, and at this point, a significant pattern that Senator Sanders does much better among independent voters. That's why he's won almost every open primary so far.
Senator, do you think this has hurt the Democratic Party?
No, not in the least. The polls clearly show that no matter which candidate is chosen, the party will rally behind that candidate. And I can tell you that one of the more interesting things about the GraysonPrimary.com, where I invited people to come and vote, is that we also invited people to come and give their reasons, and no one went negative against the other side. We didn't have Clinton people saying, I would never vote for Sanders. We didn't have Sanders people saying, I would never vote for Clinton. Both sides have their arguments. I mean, it's pretty clear. The secretary's supporters say that, in essence, she'll continue the Obama legacy. It would be wonderful to have a woman president, and she's a very qualified candidate. The Sanders supporters say the country desperately needs real change, and he's offering that, and he can deliver on that. That's
all right.
What this election's all about.
Venezuelan opposition leader Enrique Capriles has urged Venezuelans not to recognize President Nicolas Maduro's emergency decree, which gave the president expanded powers to deal with the current economic crisis.
Absolutamente nulo. Absolutely void. This decree is unconstitutional. And Maduro isn't above the Constitution. No minister is above the Constitution. This decree here gives him powers to do anything. We are not going to accept this decree. We're not accepting it. And I call on Venezuelans to not recognize this decree if Maduro insists on implementing it.
Last Friday, Maduro ordered a state of exception and economic emergency, extending his special powers for another 60 days. Maduro responded to Capriles' call Wednesday with a prediction of the imminent demise of the opposition-led parliament in the midst of an acrimonious conflict of powers in Caracas that he said is delaying the resolution of the economic crisis and growing street protests.
The National Assembly have lost political validity. It's a matter of time before it disappears. That's what I believe. It's disconnected from the national interest, and I'm sure that they will veto the national emergency decree because they want to finish with this country's economic life, they say, to arrive on a red carpet to government.
Saudi Arabia issued a threat to overthrow Syria's President Bashar al-Assad by force if the political process fails to do so. Saudi Arabia's foreign minister made the threat following another round of talks by the International Syria Support Group in Vienna. This was the Saudi foreign minister, Abdel al-Jubeir, Tuesday.
It was made very clear that Bashar al-Assad has two choices. Either he can be removed through a political process or he will be removed by force. Unfortunately, the more the violence continues, the more death and destruction we see in Syria. So that's where we what we achieved at this conference. Now, the choice about moving to an alternative plan, the choice about intensifying the military support is entirely with the Bashar regime.
The Saudi foreign minister further voiced support for a so-called Plan B for Syria, which would challenge the country's territorial integrity. Saudi Arabia, the U.S., and Israel, all of which support anti-Syria militant groups fighting in Syria, have threatened to resort to partitioning the country if the conflict is not resolved to their satisfaction politically. Meanwhile, the U.S.-based Human Rights Watch condemned a pending mass trial of Shia Muslims in the Saudi kingdom, calling it a mockery of justice. The 32 men were put on trial in February over allegedly spying for Iran. HRW said all but one of the 32 men are Shia Muslims who have been in custody since 2013. The group said the trial violated basic due process rights of the accused. Saudi authorities have not allowed lawyers to meet with their clients or to access necessary court documents. Saudi prosecutors seek the death penalty against 25 of the accused over alleged offenses that were termed high treason by the government. They also face charges which HRW said are not internationally recognized crimes, including efforts to spread their Shia faith in Saudi Arabia. The group slammed the trials as legal window dressing, where the verdict has been decided beforehand. William Spring is a human rights activist based in the UK. He spoke with Press TV's Bardi Ahonardar via Skype from London Wednesday.
It's not been a very good week for the Saudis. They not only have they had this criticism from Human Rights Watch, but the Congress in America has made it clear that there are no inhibitions about American citizens suing or litigating the Saudi authorities for their role in 9/11. And also, the foreign minister of Saudi Arabia, Jubeir, is in such a state of desperation that he's now calling for an invasion by Saudi Arabia of Syria. Well, this is obviously ridiculous. The Saudis are in deep trouble, not least with their economy and the problems over oil and so on. Now, this particular issue of the lack of due process, everybody knows about that anyway. That's been going on for years. The mass executions on a Friday afternoon in the main square, it's just appalling. And yet the Americans and the British government, Philip Hammond in particular, is well aware of this abusive process, of these violations of human rights. And yet, for some reason, the British government maintains cordial relations with the Saudi dynasty. Now, this is double standards of the worst kind, and I hope that eventually that someone in Whitehall or in Washington will see sense and actually disassociate the West from these sort of actions. There's not only a persecution of Shia, there's a persecution of any group which is independent or from the peculiar Wahhabi tradition, which is not, in my mind, Sunni Islam anyway, but is a deviation. And anyone, any group which is in any way heterodox or dissenting from these strange beliefs is targeted by the Saudi regime.
The U.S. Senate Thursday unanimously approved a bill that would allow the families of 9/11 victims to file lawsuits against Saudi Arabia for its alleged role in the terrorist attacks. RT's Alexei Yaroshovsky reports.
The bill, which sailed through the U.S. Senate unanimously today, is called the Justice Against Sponsors of Terrorism Act, or JASTA. If it ever becomes law, it would essentially allow the ordinary U.S. citizens to file lawsuits against foreign governments if they believe those governments were involved in terrorist attacks on the U.S. soil. And we are primarily talking here about the families of the 9/11 victims who have been trying for years to file a lawsuit against the Saudi Arabian government, which they believe was instrumental in that attack. This bill still has a very long way to go. Indeed, it passed the Senate. Now it's going into the House, which has its own rather more cautious version of it. And we must not forget about a very staunch opposition from the White House, which has again been reiterated today by its spokesperson.
It's difficult to imagine the president signing this legislation. The president of the United States continues to harbor serious concerns that this legislation would make the United States vulnerable in other court systems around the world. There's also a concern that hasn't gotten as much attention about the potential vulnerability that is created for some of our allies and partners in U.S. courts.
The vulnerability that the White House spokesperson was talking about is basically if this bill becomes law, it will make lawsuits against the United States from other countries possible. The United States have a lot of special operations abroad, and countries would probably be looking forward to suing the United States for a number of those failed operations. Another reason that's been cited by critics all the time is that the United States is very cautious about its relations with Saudi Arabia. It's not only about the relations between Washington and Riyadh, but there's also been a stern warning coming from the foreign minister of the kingdom just last month in Washington, D.C. He said that the country would sell almost $750 billion worth of securities and assets belonging to the United States if this bill ever becomes law. Whether it will become law, we'll certainly find out next week when it goes into the House.
William Rodriguez was at the World Trade Center when the planes hit on September 11th, 2001. He's been pushing for a new investigation of the catastrophic event for more than a decade.
The reason that it hits me personally is because I lost 200 friends on 9/11. So I will know personally how the family, victims and survivors feel directly about the government's position about it. And the problem here we have from the very beginning was that 15 of the 19 hijackers were from Saudi Arabia. So we had an issue that this information was not followed through from the very beginning to basically get to the people that were behind sponsoring or giving funds to organizations that actually made possible this attack on 9/11. And remember, it's not because it's of Americans. 9/11 affected 92 different countries of people that died on that event.
Les Jamieson is an activist who has been one of the primary drivers behind this bill and H.R. 14, which seeks to force the disclosure of 28 pages that are missing from the official 9/11 report. We spoke with him from New York via Skype Wednesday.
Wow, a unanimous vote in the Senate.
Exactly right, Don. The JASTA bill was voted on yesterday, and it got a unanimous voice vote in favor of passage. So this is incredibly dramatic, especially given the fact that there's been so much tension and controversy over the passage of this bill, namely coming from the White House in opposition. The reason given is that the Obama administration fears that allowing diplomatic immunity to be lifted from Saudi Arabia or any country found to be guilty of an act of terrorism on U.S. soil resulting in death of Americans, this would then in turn, they fear, leave the U.S. vulnerable to similar lawsuits from foreign countries where we are engaged in acts of war and commit crimes, war crimes. So isn't that an incredible controversy? Now, regardless of the veto of JASTA, the Senate voted unanimously yesterday to pass the bill. So this is
that's more than two-thirds.
Literally a form of revolt going on within Congress.
Yeah, bipartisan revolt. I mean, unanimous means all the Democrats, all the Republicans, and both independents.
Exactly, exactly. It's completely bipartisan, which is incredible. And Chuck Schumer, by the way, is one of the main, the originators of this bill, along with, I think it's James Corbyn of Texas, who's Republican. So Schumer being a Democrat, of course, and he has led this effort behind JASTA, and being of the same party of President Obama, it just goes to show that, yes, this is an out-and-out form of revolt. Now, what happens next, Don, is this. It has to go to the House for them to, all members of the House of Representatives to deliberate and then take a vote on. And then it goes to the president for him to either sign or to veto. Now, what is going to happen in the House is the question next, and
right.
I will predict that, yes, there may be a few members who take the side of the president. However, the indication is that it will pass, I'd say, by a good margin in the House, given the fact that the 28 pages resolution is gaining steam, is gaining momentum in the House, and it's related. The release of declassification of the 28 pages is a completely a parallel effort to the JASTA legislation. So since April 10th, here's what I'm seeing as the reasoning why this will be seen favorably in the House. Since the April 10th airing of the 60 Minutes expose on the 28 pages, another 72 members of Congress have requested to read the 28 pages.
Right.
And so there are 52 co-sponsors already, and another 72 just in the last month have requested access to the secure room in the Capitol basement where the classified documents are stored to gain access to read the 28 pages for themselves.
So these two things are related, of course. On the one hand, the ability to get past the sovereign immunity defense by basically stripping Saudi Arabia, in this particular instance, of sovereign immunity, is intrinsically so people can actually file a lawsuit. Now, litigating that, of course, they need evidence of participation by the Saudis, and that's what many people say is hidden inside the 28 pages. So this should move forward the demands further, as you just mentioned, you're seeing already in the Congress, for H.R. 14, the bill that you've been working on, and the disclosure of that information.
Exactly, exactly. So with JASTA being passed, should it be passed? And by the way, if Obama does attempt to veto the JASTA legislation, guess what? The Senate will override his veto.
Yeah, yeah, 100% is more than two-thirds, definitely.
Exactly. Then with that capability, that then definitely allows the lawsuit by 6,000 9/11 family members to move forward Saudi Arabia reinstated as defendants in their case, which is now, by the way, entered on appeal by the legal team of the 9/11 families. Yeah. So that's in process.
And then, I guess also you have discovery, right?
Being revealed will provide the evidence that they've acquired to prove the case against the Saudi royal family and organizations, charities, and so forth, which there's evidence that funding came from those sources to a few of the accused 9/11 hijackers.
Yeah, so, I mean, and we're talking also, once they can commence the lawsuits, you know, and sustain it in terms of getting over the threshold to the courthouse, now you're talking about this being relevant evidence, and you may end up even with a constitutional crisis where the court orders the production of the 28 pages as evidence, and, you know, of course, the White House attempts to shield it.
That's exactly right, Don, because we don't know right now that the 20 pages will be fully declassified. And this is the current scenario in which we are told by the Obama White House and specifically James Clapper, National Defense Intelligence Director, that it's going now through the phase of final review and there will be a decision by the end of June. Now, other statements lead us to believe that it to be a partial release, not a full release. And this is what I know the 9/11 families are very much watching and very much concerned about and are pressuring for a full release. And I think we're seeing this also from some politicians and how you had like this, the editorial boards of the New York Times, USA Today, Star Tribune are calling for full disclosure. I think the Boston Globe as well. And so the pressure is really on for the 20 pages to be fully declassified. And it's an incredible conundrum that the White House is experiencing here, because on the one hand, they have the Saudi Arabian, you know, considerations as our allies in the Middle East, and the fact that there's a threat from Saudi Arabia saying that they will unload $750 billion worth of U.S. treasuries right. if JASTA passes, which is a clear indication that there is something incredibly incriminating that they are afraid of being held to account for.
Right.
And so this is an incredible catch-22 that the U.S. Leadership finds itself in. And on the one hand, they are advocating for the ongoing protection of Saudi Arabia in this 9/11 case. Then on the other hand, they have the 9/11 families and the general public that is clamoring for the release of the 28 pages.
You know, then you have two more dimensions, one on either side to it. On the one hand, Saudi Arabia also sits at the center of OPEC, and many say was responsible for driving down the price of oil in the past year and a half, which in turn, A, gave some political space economically to the Obama administration at home, and B, targeted geopolitically many adversaries of the U.S. or targets of the U.S. from Russia to Venezuela, Brazil, and Argentina, etc. That's on one side. On the other side, every member of the House who is going to be looking at the JASTA bill next is up for re-election this year, and this issue could well end up being a campaign issue in the presidential election. Where do the presidential candidates stand on this?
Interestingly, both Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton are co-signers. I'm sorry, not Hillary Clinton. I know she has made a statement saying that she favors the passage of JASTA, and Bernie Sanders, being a standing senator, did co-sign the legislation one day after finding out about it. Okay. So I know Bernie is very much on the side of full disclosure and the ability for the 9/11 families to hold Saudi Arabia accountable legally. As far as Donald Trump, He is very much aware of the 28 pages issue and the Saudi Arabian scenario in terms of its connection to 9/11. And I believe he would also favor passage of JASTA and the release of the 28 pages. And he's actually stated that in a one of his campaign rallies.
So any chance any of them are going to actually pledge to release it?
Good question. I think that's where now we, the public, should show up at the upcoming political rallies and events and conventions and with banners and hold them to it. Absolutely.
Okay. And finally, up next with H.R. 14, where are we at in terms of that process?
We're at 52 co-sponsors right now, and I think we need to keep the heat up. At HR14.org is an action alert. And right now we're in a critical phase where we need to be calling the White House switchboard, the office of James Clapper, as well as both the House and the Senate Intelligence Committees, demanding full disclosure, because the indications are the White House, James Clapper, is probably going to want to keep at least a portion of the 28 pages suppressed and classified. And it's absolutely critical that we put pressure from the grassroots on our leadership that we demand full disclosure. And by the way, there's a Rasmussen poll that came out, Rasmussen Reports poll that came out, April 25th. And 74% of the population wants everything that the government knows about 9/11 and has kept secret. They want it released. And also 3/4 of the population feels that our government has been deceiving the public about 9/11, mostly for political reasons. So we have an incredible head of steam here. And now we just need to raise our voices and have the public go to HR14.org, and you'll see the action alert right there. So we're in a critical phase here in the next month. And let's say, whatever happens with the decision, the 28 pages is critically important, but it is also, I see it as an opening in which we need to then broaden the questioning, broadening the demand for even more details about 9/11, such as the entire FBI pattern of cover-up, John Ashcroft, George Tenet, and of course Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, and Rice, and their indications of their obstruction of justice. And of course, the put options and the NORAD failure of air defense that morning, and the removal of Steele from Ground Zero, and of course, the incredible analysis by architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth about the collapses of the towers, and especially Building 7. Right. So we have quite a process before us here, and it's critically important that we follow through.
Yeah, an awful lot of questions that still remain, and certainly the opening of the fact, if that's what these pages show, of Saudi involvement, the U.S. ally, and a partner in many of the wars that have followed since 9/11, might be very revealing. Wes Jamison, thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.